Welcome to a top five edition of the Daytime Confidential podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're counting down our top five Guiding Light characters in honor of Guiding Light and its upcoming last episode. We hope you enjoy, so stay tuned. Mike, welcome.
Hey there.
Jillian, welcome.
Hello.
Mel, welcome.
Hello.
Jamie, welcome.
Love can save the world.
Oh boy, it's going to be one of those episodes. Jamie, who do you have as your number five?
My number five is Alan Michael Spaulding, as played by Rick Hurst, who is now on The Bold and the Beautiful as Whip Jones. When I started watching this show, Alan Michael and his Aunt Alex, first Beverly McKenzie, then Marge Ducey, were the scheming, you know, auntie-nephew duo of Springfield. And I loved A.M. I loved him when he was a villain. I loved him when he was coming between Frank and Elaney. And then I adored him when they put him with Sonia Sartre's Lucy, one of my all-time favorite couples ever. And I really wanted him to go back. I would have, like, God, although Rick Hurst is telling me I don't want to be in no bush, I'm glad I'm on Bold and the Beautiful. But
no,
I'm just kidding. Rick Hurst did not tell me that. But anyway.
I'm dressing robes, fool.
Yeah, my number five is Alan Michael Spaulding, as played by Rick Hurst.
Mel?
My number five is Buzz Cooper. He's been on the show a while, and he came on and he originally wasn't this good guy that everybody thought he was because he ran away from his family, but he eventually got his stuff together and worked through it, and Justin Deese is just an amazing actor. Buzz always makes me, he always puts a smile on my face, always makes me think Guiding Light. So my number five is Buzz Cooper.
Oh, that was sweet.
Mike?
I'm glad Luke didn't qualify that this had to be current characters because I don't think I could stomach it. So I'm going to go with people that have really made an impact on the show over the course of, you know, the time that I've been watching. So my number five would be Blake Marler. Blake grew up as Christina Thorpe as a young girl. So she pretty much grew up on screen. She was raised a Bauer, and she's the daughter of Roger and Holly.
Then she screwed one.
Mm-hmm. She really was cut from the same cloth as her dad. She basically had some issues with being Roger's daughter. She was not happy with the way her life turned out, so she was always causing trouble. She married a Spaulding or two. One of them would have been Jamie's Alan Michael. But basically, she's always been in trouble. The love of her life, Ross, she stole from her mother to get even with her. And became, actually that changed her. Once she met Ross and admitted that she loved him and stayed with him, she seemed to have mellowed out. And I just miss the old Blake. When I see Elizabeth Kiefer on screen, I know what she was like. And I guess that's what I'm going to have to live with now. So Blake's my number five.
I'm going to cry. This is the Guiding Light I'm mourning.
Yeah.
This is the Guiding Light I'm mourning. Not that mess that we have on our TVs today.
Only love can save the world.
Jillian?
My number five is Alexander Spaulding, a.k.a. Beverly McKenzie's version. That's the one that I grew up on. She was an heiress that wasn't afraid to get her hands dirty and didn't care of the consequences. She goes after what she wants, and if you mess around with one of her children and it's not to her liking, then God help you. And if you mess with her, take cover. She was famous for going after Mindy when she found out that Melinda Sue was sleeping with Roger, her husband at the time, and you know, she found out that Mindy also was, you know, when Mindy was trying to tell her about the Lou Jack clone, which was Nick McHenry. And when Alexandra really thought, before any testing was done, that that was my son, she was just going hard on Mindy. She was trying to hit at. She let it be known that Mindy was getting freaky sneaky with Roger, and Big Billy just went upside that Thunderdome, and she just kept it hood. So that Alexandra Spaulding was a bitch not to be messed with.
No, that thing at the country club was like the best.
Oh,
that
my
was
Lord.
The best.
Oh,
she just dropped
dimes. I'm ravenous.
she was just dropping dimes on folk. That was the baddest bitch right there.
Well, I feel woefully inadequate when it comes to doing this episode in comparison to the rest of you who've been watching this show for much longer. So I'm going to just have my simple little list. And at number five, it's going to be Alan Spaulding. I know that Jamie does not like mustache-twirling villains, but it's well documented that I do. He's a great villain. I enjoy him like I do Edward on General Hospital, Adam on All My Children.
Neither of whom are mustache-twirling villains, by
but
the way.
But they are. They are in many
respects. No, they're not. They can act, and they don't
Edward
act like they're...
Edward is not a villain? What are you talking about?
Edward can be a villain.
He can, but he's not a mustache twirler. A mustache twirler is not complex. Mm-hmm. A mustache twirler is, I'll get you, my pretty, for no reason other than I'll get
and
you.
And your little dog, too. Yeah.
So you can't add Adam Chandler and Edward into that conversation like I don't like them, because they are awesome, amazing,
I wasn't saying that you didn't like them, but I do. He's a patriarch. I love villainous patriarchs on soaps.
Like
so
who?
He is my number five. Jamie, number four.
My number four is Jenna Bradshaw, the jewel thief. I love Jenna. I love when she was, you know, on the show from the beginning, and she believed she was Henry Chamberlain's long-lost daughter, and she warred with Vanessa, and Henry knew all along he wasn't her father, but he wanted to be. And because of some faux codicil in a will or something, she ended up with Spaulding for a time. And that's when they had the maid that went on, the woman who went on to be really famous, Allison Janney, isn't that her name?
Allison Janney.
She was the Spaulding maid during these years. And, you know, Jenna was the mistress of the manor, you know, when it was a manor to be a mistress of. And I just remember her initial romance with Buzz, and Buzz sneaking up onto the parapet and... Like, and she was with Roger at the time, and she's like, what are you doing here? Roger's going to find you and give you the horsewhipping you so richly deserve. And, you know, it was just this amazing storyline, and her bond with Maeve Kincaid, and her love affair with Buzz, and Coop, and everything. I mean, Jenna, her friendship with Harley, you know, Harley, who was her rival and didn't want her to be with her father. Jenna was amazing. Killing off Jenna was one of the top 10 reasons that this show really started pissing me off. So Jenna Bradshaw is my number four.
Mel?
Okay, for my number four, I'm going to be bad, and I have a tie. And they're two completely different characters, but I couldn't have this list without one or the other. So I'm going to start with my number one, number four, and that is Miss Andy Dutton. Because Cynthia Watros is one of the best villains this show has had. Oh, my God. I loved everything having to do with Annie. I will never, ever forget that scene when Annie threw herself down the stairs. Oh, my Lord. Oh, Annie. And then my other number four is the golden child himself, and it is Philip Spaulding. Because I've watched this show off and on my entire life, but I have always kept up with what was going on with Philip Spaulding. So, minus that little time there where he lost his mind, Philip was always, like, he's the go-to character. Everybody loves Philip because he's just Philip. So, that's my number four.
Beth loved him so much that she messed with his daddy.
I refuse to believe that was Beth. Anything under Ellen Wheeler, they're pod people. It's like on True Blood, like I keep saying, their eyes went black and they don't know what they've done in the last 5 years.
Mike?
Number four, Mel's favorite is going to be Harley Davidson Cooper.
Harley!
You can't really say... That you don't have a top five without putting Harley somewhere in there.
I can.
I can.
I know you can. But she, basically came on as a 17-year-old for the wrong side of the tracks. Classic story in soaps where a girl from the wrong side of the tracks hooks up with the wealthy guy, and she had a baby who she gave up for adoption when she was with Alan Michael, and she got involved with the Spaldings, and
she
was Josh's nanny for a while. So her presence on the show is definitely felt. And I know Mel doesn't miss her, but
let me just say, I used to love Harley because she is Harley. You know, she's our tragic heroine of the show. But I don't think I can forgive her for that last mess she pulled. So,
oh yes, we know about that mess, don't we,
Jillian?
I can't forgive her.
My number four is another Spalding. This is Alexandra's brother, Alan, another one of those Spalding family members that keeps up the mantra, I'm doing this for your own good, even when it suits his own needs. And that's the only way you can explain him teaming up with Roger Thorpe. And he has so much swagger, granted a controlling and manipulative one, that he could pull his son's old girlfriends. I mean, that's a hustler right there. So that's my number four.
My number four is Dinah. When I first started watching the show, there was basically three reasons for watching this show. Lizzie Spalding, Marge Doucet, who I had seen on All My Children, because I had never seen her on anything prior to All My Children. So I was tuning in to see what she was like on Guiding Light, and Dinah. Dinah and Mallet, for me, were almost, I enjoyed them together as a couple almost as much as I enjoyed Lizzie and Bill. But, and so she was one of the two reasons. Gina Tognoni is dynamic in the role. Dinah is no holes barred, will do what it takes, and I love those type of characters. Jamie, who do you have at number three?
My number three is a tie. Blake Marler and Harley Davidson Cooper. When I started watching this show, Blake was one of the fieriest schemer vixen characters in daytime. I started watching a little bit while Santa Barbara was still on, and so I remember Sherry Stringfield in the role.
Oh,
and a lot of people consider her the best Blake or this and that.
I beg to differ.
For me, I love Liz Kiefer, have loved her from moment one. Blake used to just be this fiery, just, oh God, the things she would do. Her chemistry with Rick Hurst was just so amazing and untapped. I love Blake and Ross, one of my favorite couples of all time, but I always wanted to see more of what would have been with Blake and Alan Michael. And have hated the show for so long for not utilizing her. And I know mine is going to be like a big bitch fest, but I'm sorry. I did not need to see glamorous former Spalding CEO, romance novelist, corporate schemer Blake Marler stacking dishes at company.
It hurts my heart.
Year. It's just so fucking stupid. Blake, you know, and then you have Harley. You have Harley, who I wasn't watching when she first appeared, but Harley and Mallet with Mark Derwin, amazing. Harley and Philip with Grant Alexander, one of my all-time favorite couples of all time. I could not stand. I told Beth Chamberlain this when she joined, when she came back to the show. I was like, who are you and what are you trying to do to Farley? I loved Philip and Harley. I don't think they ever should have been broken up. I don't think Gus was the love of her life. I think Philip was.
Yeah.
They were amazing. Oh my gosh. I just loved that whole Cooper dynamic. And you know, even up to the end, I loved Harley. And I don't blame her for stealing her that Cyrus from Miranda, because that baby didn't know what to do with that man.
Yes, she did. He had to get hit over the head with a ton of bricks to leave her. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
A grown woman.
He had to get hit over the head.
It's still no play ball.
He had to get hit over the head. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
Mel?
Yes.
Who do you have at number three?
Jamie got me all reclipped and shit. Okay.
I knew that would.
All right, my number three is the villain of all villains, possibly my favorite villain ever, and that is Blake's father, Roger.
Talk about
a complex character. Complex, really. Roger would go hard when he needed to, but on the other hand, you know, he could get down. So, yes. Just, and everybody always talks about the famous scene where Alex goes hard on Roger for sleeping with Mindy and all of that. And when Michael Zaslow died, it's one of the saddest moments ever in soap history. And it's also sad what they did to him to get him off of the show. But just the fact that Michael was so awesome and Roger
was the culprit behind that?
Y'all already know. Anyways.
No, I don't know.
Go ahead, Jillian. Go ahead.
I don't know. Who is it, Mel?
Mickey Alice Wide Dobbin. I'll say it.
I didn't have a person say it. Shit. I was going to say Chris Galvin for a minute there.
No, Chris wouldn't. He was over there killing another world, I believe, at that point. But no, it was Mickey Alice Wide Dobbin. And she gave quotes in the press about nobody wanting to see Roger become a weasened old man. Weasened old executive, but we couldn't see him become a weasened old man. Beats all I've ever seen and heard.
Roger Thorpe was the shit best villain ever. So there you go.
Oh, Mel. God, you're making me sad.
Hell, Mike? My number three, I actually just bumped somebody because I feel like I have to give tribute to this character. Maureen Bauer. She was the set to be after Burt Bauer died, and she actually died on the show as well. The show was pretty much poised to hand Maureen over the heroine matriarch role, and she was actually played by Ellen Dolan when she first started, and then Ellen Parker. So basically, the wise executives at CBS and P&G decided that it would be a good idea to kill Maureen, who was the heart and soul of the show. And that, I believe, was probably the beginning of a really bad time for Guiding Light, because they never really recovered from that. So Maureen, RIP, your show's going down with you. And
Jill fair and fuck up.
Yeah.
She was a victim of a focus group. That was
tell
great.
The truth and shame the devil. See, that Jill Farron Phelps is slick. She doesn't kill him. She just leaves him mortally wounded, and she goes on to the next victim. She'll exit GH.
She did that to what? Another world's favorite.
She didn't just
kill her. She slashed her to ribbons on TV in front of everybody.
She'll hit the escape button from GH pretty soon and parachute out of there, leaving them mortally wounded.
Well, where else would there be left to go?
She'll kill
Young and the Restless.
Well, Days is doing pretty good, so she'll parachute down over there.
Oh, good point, Jillian. Number three
said I should kill Maggie Horton.
Oh Lord, my number three is Philip Spaulding. I mean, that's who I grew up on, the golden boy, the boy who everybody loved, the boy who all the girls wanted to throw themselves at, throw their panties at. Philip was the shit. And then, I mean, I wasn't really watching Guiding Light, as people know, after like a 14-year sabbatical, you know, when I heard that they killed off, quote-unquote, killed Philip off, I wanted to die. I was like, y'all gonna kill Philip Spaulding off? I mean, besides Reaver, Guiding Light is synonymous with Philip Spaulding. I mean, how could you do that? And then when they brought him back wearing some t-shirts and some sweats and a hoodie and some sweatpants, it just broke my heart. It just broke my heart all it is. You know,
like he was Clark Kent.
I know.
At least he was Philip again, though.
You know, but he's still up again trying to make amends. You know, I like that they're having him trying to make amends for some of the shit that he's pulled back in the gap, because Philip could be a son of a bitch. He was a chip off the whole block with, like, his daddy. So, Lord have mercy. Philip Granville Spaulding.
Coming in at number three for me is a tie. I had to put these two together because over the last year and a half, 2 years, when things got so bad, on the rare occasions that they actually had scenes and there was the slightest glimmer of hope that they could be reunited, it was magic. Reva and Josh, Kim Zimmer and Robert Newman, every time I think about the last couple years and how bad things went, I think of a few bright spots. Even though the cancer line storyline for or the cancer storyline for Reva wasn't the greatest,
Kim Zimmer.
Well, I guess there was two this last time, wasn't there? Both, though, the one that I was thinking more so was the one where she kept it a secret. I hated that she kept it a secret, but Kim Zimmer's acting in those scenes were great. But then when you think about, like, when they went and filmed Josh and Reva's movie and they had that scene where they were talking with the champagne glasses, it was just one of those wonderful moments to see them together. And so these two had to be number three for me. Jamie, who do you have at number two?
My number two is Dinah Marler, as played by both Wendy Moniz and Gina Tognoni. I prefer Wendy in the role. I'm going to be real about it, but I have to say Gina is one of the better recasts I've ever seen in daytime. But Wendy Moniz as Dinah, and she wasn't the first. There's Paige Turco and a couple of others before her. But for me, Wendy Moniz was that classic Streetcar Named Desire-esque Scarlett O'Hara sex bomb on this show. Her scenes with Maeve Kincaid, where Dinah and Vanessa dealt with their mother-daughter drama, was some of the best stuff I ever saw in daytime. I mean, the way she could get into it with Maeve Kincaid and just get under Vanessa's skin and make her feel guilty about, like, giving her up and her ending up being a carny. I mean, and just, you know, this young actress opposite Michael Zaslow and Roger Thorpe and, you know, Frank Grillo, who she ended up marrying, who played Hart. I mean, she was phenomenal. Laura Wright, when she joined that show, I wanted to drive to Brooklyn and cuss her out for coming between my Hart and my Dinah. My grandmother loved Cassie, and we would just scream at each other in the living room because I wanted Dinah to bust a cap in that stripper's chest, but she didn't have a good aim. She shot Hart, and I feel like poor Dinah had to run off and pretend to be a princess and all that stuff because she was not trying to kill her man. She was trying to kill Cassie, and I didn't blame her. But, you know, she came back with Gina Tognoni in the role. I was a little skeptical because I was like, that little girl from One Life to Live, how is she going to bring it? You know, but she brought it, and I've really fallen in love with her version of Dinah. And
she told you.
Yeah, she did. I was like, go ahead. She's no Wendy Moniz, but I like her. That's my number two.
Mel?
My number two is somebody people have said already many, many times, and she needs to be said again, and it is Christina Blake Thorpe. I love me some Blake, and I miss the old Blake, too. The Blake that was sleeping with Alabaco on the roof and tried to get Ross from Holly and all that. She was a schemer and everything, and I love, love, love her. It breaks my heart today to see Blake in company being a waitress.
Slinging that hash.
Blake, yeah. Roger Thorpe's daughter. Oh, waitress? No, I need you to be scheming and trying to break up somebody's marriage or something. But she's always been a favorite character of mine.
Yeah, you know, and she's like keeps making moves on Frank, but it's like the Blake that I knew would have like freaking tackled Frank on the ground,
had him,
but he wouldn't have known what hit him.
Blake I knew would have had him on the floor
yes, he
already.
Would have.
The Blake I knew wouldn't even be bothering. She'd be over there after Cyrus.
She'd have stole Cyrus right out from under Marina.
Ooh, I'm going to get y'all. Ooh, Lord.
She wanted a rabbit. That little girl.
Y'all just wait.
She hadn't even budded yet.
Oh, my God. Oh, yo.
That's what I couldn't stand about this show. All these 40-year-old men dating these little girls for the last 5 years. Whose fantasy was that, Ellen Wheeler? I'm sorry.
Mike?
My number two is the legendary Reva Shane Lewis.
O'Neill.
She was introduced in 1983, brought to town by Alan Spaulding just to break up Billy and Vanessa.
Go ahead, Mom.
And she's the force to be reckoned with. There would be really hard to say how this show would have fared without Reva. She's not always my favorite character, but you definitely cannot miss her presence on the show. I mean, one of the greatest soap moments in history was when she baptized herself.
Oh, tell it,
Slut of Springfield, and was tormenting Josh in the wheelchair. She's been everything from an Amish time-traveling clone to...
Girl
that's like talking to her Jeffrey's clothes now. She's been reduced to talking to lanterns and windows, so, and screaming on street corners in PPAC. But anyway, Reva, would this show
in
not
two
be
little great. Dresses that they
Thank
should be
you.
Ashamed of themselves and why they didn't take her to Lane Bryant and get that woman's clothes.
No, you did not do that,
Jillian.
My mouth is just still like, I'm all verklempt now, you know?
I love Kim Zimmer. That's not even about Kim Zimmer. Look, don't tell me to shut up. No, but it's like, they know better than that. They can put that girl in some nice clothes.
They do that with everybody. Shut up. Woo! This shit. I'm all lost now. But I have a tie. It is the lovers from way back way back like four flats on a Cadillac. That is Reva Shane and Joshua.
Joshua.
That's how she say it.
Bud. Oh my God. Joshua Bud. I'm like, you watching the Cosby Show? Stop with that Bud shit. I mean, how can you not love a woman that can baptize herself in a fountain and claim that she is the slut of Springfield? I was like, what? When she did that, I don't know how old I was. I probably was like a little tyke or whatever. But when I saw that, I was like, oh my God. Oh my Lord. Josh is in that wheelchair. Like, if I could get out of this thing, girl, I want to get you. But Reva always thinks with her heart and not with her head, which lands her in more troubles than I have fingers. But in the end, the plan was all for the right reason if the aftermath doesn't exude as such. She's always looking for love, even if it means to find out all them Lewis men. She'll go to bat for you in a heartbeat. I'll take on anyone that'll try to do harm with her family. And then you have her, the true love of her life, which is Josh. Josh used to be a black sheep himself and decided to get all uppity and decides to, you know, he loved Reva. He loved when Reva act like a freak in the sheets, but in public, he's like, no, girl, we in public. We around people. Stop it. You know, Josh is another one that he always tries to, not another one, but he tries to look for the good in people, but at the same time, he could be hypocritical. It just makes the two of them so perfect for each other. So, there you have it.
Coming in at number two for me, I have Alexandra Spaulding, portrayed by Marge Doucet. I did not watch the previous actress in the role, so I cannot make a comment. I was a fan of Marge Doucet from All My Children, so I did follow her, in some respects, over to Guiding Light. Alexandra, in many ways, reminds me of a Dorian, reminds me of a Helena, though not the knife-wielding part of Helena. And I just love the moments between her and Alan, where she will just basically just rip him down, but at the same time, she knows when to be supportive, but always knowing that she's willing to stab him in the back if necessary. I love this character.
I do too, and I miss the old Alex. I do, and I'm
Which
sure.
Which one is that? The one that didn't come out of bushes?
No, just the character. I mean, I know Marge Doucet has what it takes to do Alex right. It's just that whole thing where she hasn't really had the chance to do it.
Shit,
Jamie, who do you have at number one?
My number one is a tie. I think that these will go down in history as the two most iconic characters in this show's history and in the soap's history. In soap history, two of the most. That's Roger
Say it,
Thorpe.
Jamie. Say it.
Roger Thorpe and Reva Shane. I adore both of their long-term screen partners. I love Holly and I love Josh, and they will be honorable mentions for me. But when I think of Guiding Light, I think of two people, and that's Roger and Reva. It's just these two iconic characters. What can you say about them? Roger Thorpe, as played by Michael Zaslow, who only played him. Well, yeah, no, I take that back. That Dennis Parlato played him. Yeah. I blocked that out. But Roger is – Michael Zaslow is my all-time favorite soap actor ever, 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 ever. He – this man, like, just exuded, like, confidence, sexuality, strength, vulnerability. He could be the most menacing, diabolical person planning to make Dinah go – insane by drugging her 1 minute and then be in a scene with Holly and just melt and just be like, you know, it's the end of the world, Holly. And she just go back to him over and over again. He raped her. He tried to, you know, he kidnapped her. He did whatever, but she just couldn't get enough of Roger Thorpe. And I felt it. I got it. I mean, the man was just amazing. Best character in daytime ever. I can't think of one that is more iconic of what daytime could do best than, or emblematic rather, than Roger Thorpe. Reva Shane is basically the female equivalent of that. I mean, Kim Zimmer, you know, is the woman who will go down in history as the person who could literally read the phone book to you and you would watch. This past year, they tested that over and over again by almost really having her read a phone book or, you know, talk to pictures of dead people. But Lanterns. She is that kind of, yeah, the last year will not negate what Reva Shane was. I mean, I go back on YouTube all the time and I look at clips. I was watching one the other day. I think I sent it to either Jillian or Mel, where she ho-checked Olivia about Mara. And I was like, remember this Guiding Light? She came in with this red leather coat on and her lipstick spiky blonde hair. That was Guiding Light. But, you know, I'm not going to talk about that. Acting-wise, Kim Zimmer couldn't be touched. Couldn't be touched for years. And even to the end, you know, she's giving her all with this crap they've given her. And, you know, she enjoyed working with Bradley Cole, you know, she promoted that. I'm not going to restart all that, but it's like she did. I think that there is, it's truthfully to be said that she kind of shot herself in the foot. Like any common sense a year ago would have had her and Robert Newman rushing to Ellen Wheeler and demanding that they be put back together. But that's not what we got. I don't know. Maybe we've got what? As we do this, we've got a week or two, you know, a week and a half left. I guess maybe we'll get, I don't know what we'll get. But it won't be satisfying for this Josh and Reva fan or just even a fan of Reva. You know, they just did so many harebrained bullshit things with this show. You know, moving Cross Creek from Oklahoma. Reva having this cancer and not telling Josh after everything that lies had done to them at this point and everything they came through. She wouldn't have told that lie, you know, and now Jeffrey is the de facto love of her life. And Josh is just a tool that she yells at when he can't help her get in her car and just all this ridiculous stuff. And, you know, this new baby at 55 years old, it's just, this is not the Reva I will remember. I will remember the Reva who battled Annie Dutton. I will remember the Reva who battled Olivia. I will remember the Reva who fought with her daughter Mara and, you know, who every man in town had been married to and still was in love with. And just this iconic character. I won't allow what Ellen Wheeler did to destroy Reva color her for me.
Everything she did, she did with passion.
Yeah.
Roger
and there was no middle of the road. You know,
according to Ellen Wheeler in the New York Times, she said fans were very receptive. In the new New York Times Online, she claims that fans were really receptive. I want to know who
of
that
what?
Man is.
Of what?
Of this new model?
No, they weren't. She's an idiot. This woman is an idiot. She lives in a bubble. That fan that she's talking about is Susan Flannery. No one was receptive of this shit. They turned it off. And I'm ready to turn her off. I really hope after September 18th, we never hear the name Ellen Wheeler connected to a soap again. Because even now, I haven't even read that, but it's just pissing me off. Even now that you fucking destroyed this soap and cost it 25% of its audience, you're lying still. Just shut up. Just stop lying to yourself.
The only way I want to hear Ellen Wheeler's name is if cast members act the fool, they say, now look. Don't make me go Ellen Wheeler on your asses and have
it's like, come on. That's what is even, why do they interview this woman so that she can still lie to people? No, people were not receptive to it. Receptive would have been keeping it turned on, and they didn't.
Mel?
I agree with Jamie, what just said. My number one is a tie. And it is Reva Shane and Joshua Lewis.
Joshua!
Yes, that's how she said it. Joshua. What was that scene? They had Joshua, like Nicole Forza said. But no. When I think of God and Light, I think of Josh and Reva. Because when I was a little girl, I was always, Josh and Reva, Josh and Reva. But Reva Shane is a balls to the walls character. The one that I remember, at least. She went hard on everybody. Don't mess with her family. Don't mess with her. Mm-hmm. That is Reva. She was a girl from the other side of the tracks that fell in love with her mama. Sarah used to be the maid at the Lewis place, right?
Yeah.
Did I just make it up? Yeah. So she fell in love with the boy in the rich house. And it's just a classic love story. I love, love, love them. But Reva that I remember, you didn't play with her. Like they say, Reva don't play that. So, and then there's Joshua, who I feel like he's always been a kind of a complex, torn character. You know, on the one hand, he'll try to be the best he can, but Joshua is a little shady, too. He always had that shady side about him, and I always loved that. And for them, for the girl from the other side of the tracks and for Josh to come together, it was always just guiding light. That's what it was. And I wish... We had more scenes with Josh and Reva together because this is the end of the show. So I don't see how you can end Guiding Light without having Josh and Reva together. They are the Guiding Light couple. So
the scene that stands out in my mind as a kid growing up is when Reva had postpartum depression and that's when she had just given birth to Shane. Oh, I was like, oh my Lord. That made me, I was like a kid. I don't know how old I was then.
I was like three, and I remember that scene to this day. I remember Reva driving off the bridge in the red car. I'm coming, bud. I'll never forget that.
I remember Josh diving in to that water, searching for Reva frantically. Reva! Reva!
The Reva in the red dress dancing on top of bars. That's the Reva I will forever remember.
Yeah.
So,
Mike?
Oh, my number one is the legendary Roger Thorpe. I don't think you could have any soap villain without thinking about Roger being the example. He'd been on for 30-plus years, I guess for that one exception, played by one actor. His character did everything under the rainbow to antagonize everybody he was connected with, whether it be blackmail, embezzlement, swindling, stealing, kidnapping, murder, whatever. He did it all. And he didn't just do it to one person. He did it to everybody. His stories were integrated into everybody else's stories and
equal opportunity.
Excellent, just excellent stuff. He was a great bad guy. He's there's nobody else that will ever be Roger Thorpe. And he's at the top of my list. You cannot have this show without think about this show without thinking about the impact that he had on everybody.
Jillian?
Oh, Lord. I mean, my number one is Roger Thorpe. I mean, what can you say about that man? You can't even – y'all already summed it up. As a kid, I did not know why they got rid of him. Only until I got older. No, not really. Okay, I would rephrase. I didn't know why they got rid of him. When I saw him on One Life to Live. I saw Michael Zaslav. That's when it started clicking. And then when I got older and read why they really got rid of him, it broke my heart. I was like, well, at least One Life to Live tried to throw him a bone. Got like that heifer, threw him under the bus. But, I mean, he is synonymous with soap villains. You cannot say name your top five soap villains and not mention Roger Thorpe. If you mention some cartoon or something, you need to get got. I mean, Roger Thorpe was the man. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I know some people are like, oh my God. Look, this is what I'm talking about in soap world. I actually thought him and Holly was the business, boy.
Oh, they were.
They were hot.
They finally, like, reconnected after all those years of torment and heartache. I was like, I screamed because, I mean, it was just full. It was sort of like a full circle moment because, for them, if you research their history, it was a full circle moment for them. So, I mean,
they actually were the first marital rape that was on TV. So, also timely. It fit in with his character, but it was something that was new to criminal courts at the time that it happened.
Yeah, it was a lot of women. Maureen Garrett said that she got letters from a lot of women who had the courage to file charges on their husbands because of that storyline. And, you know, this being television and what television does with fantasy and things like that, yes, they did have them, you know, stay together on and off over the course of the show. But unlike, you know, the great manses of that followed, where, you know, Luke and Laura, where they rewrote it and tried to say, oh, it didn't happen, it was a seduction.
Yeah.
Or recently with Marty, Marty was an amnesiac. Holly knew. Holly, and that was a through line of her story. She knew Roger Thorpe was toxic for her. She knew. Ed told her. Ross told her. Fletcher told her. Everyone told her that this woman, you know, needed to get a grip and that it was not psychologically healthy to be in love with this man. But it was very Wuthering Heights. She couldn't get enough of it. You know, they had this demonic bond almost, this demonic sexual bond between the two of them. She knew it was wrong. She knew Ed Bauer was the smart choice. You know, her mind said Ed Bauer, but her body and her very soul said Roger Thorpe. And I don't think any soap will ever be able to accomplish that again.
I mean, like, Fletcher always asks her, what is it about this guy that you cannot get out of your system? And she couldn't. She would always try to play it off, but it was the truth. She could not get Roger out of her system. And neither could I, because I loved him. And when they got rid of him, that's when my God, like, days were over. I was like, deuces, y'all got rid of Roger, I'm out. I was out. And then when I found out why they got rid of him, I was just like, you don't need to be writing a Hallmark greeting card, let alone shows. You don't need to be running no show. The only thing you need to be running is your mouth and water for some of the shit that came out of that fool's mouth about why they got rid of Roger. So,
and they could have written it in. I mean, they could have. Mm-hmm. What a powerful storyline that would have been to have this
They did
villain.
On One Life to Live.
Yeah,
they
could
sure
have had Roger develop Lou Gehrig's disease on the show. That's why I don't understand why they don't do that with characters like that. We hear that that's going on with other actors, you know, that are having health issues. Like, I would rather you write that in and tell that story than recast with somebody from Loving that, you know, no one even will ever remember in the role, and it didn't work. You know, they thought that they could, you know, keep the magic of Roger Thorpe going. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in anyone can be recast, but there is an exception to the rule, and he could not be. I think that years later, I would have loved to see what Roscoe Bourne could have done with the part.
Oh, yeah.
But at that time, with those circumstances, Roger Thorpe should not and could not have been recast. You know, and it's just, you know what's really sad, and I know this has probably been like the bitchiest top five ever, but it's like, except for Luke, since Luke is newer to the viewing, those of us who've watched the show for 10, 15, 20 years, none of the characters that have taken off in this modern regime are on our list. It's, you know, people that were created well and before Ellen Wheeler. People that, characters that she marginalized or minimized, except for Dinah, you know, are the ones on our list. And it just, I think that's really telling, because I think any, you know, hell, even Dina Higley did things on One Life to Live that people liked, like Tess, you know, but it's like, what did Ellen Wheeler bring to the table?
Talia.
That will serve of memory.
That was Jill Laurie Hurst.
No, it wasn't. Jill Laurie Hurst said it was Ellen Wheeler.
She's trying to throw Ellen a bone. She's trying to be nice.
I will give her that. But even that, I mean, what? I love Talia. I love the actors. I thought they have amazing chemistry, and it would have been a great story. But I'm saying would have, because they never did. They didn't even give them a modicum of respect or intimacy. So even with that, what did she really accomplish? She gave Crystal Chappelle the idea that will probably make her a web billionaire, because she's going to take that idea and run with it and capitalize on it and make P&G look like dumbasses when her show Venice is the hottest thing on the web next year. After Imaginary Bitches, of course. But
well, coming in at number one for me, I have Lizzie Spaulding. I loved Crystal Hunt in the role. And after she left, I loved Marcy Ryland in the role. Now, I think Marcy Ryland is probably my favorite. But Lizzie,
better be.
If she is, I mean, she is my favorite.
After we flock Jillian, she better be.
Flock who? Chaplin.
Well, I mean, this was the character that kept me tuning in. Even when things got tough, bad, I would still tune in to find out what was going to happen with her, her daughter, and eventually Bill. And I absolutely love her. My favorite character. Honorable mentions real fast. Jamie.
My honorable mentions are Holly Lindsey, Joshua Lewis, Alexander Spaulding. I know that you're like, what? Alex wasn't on here? But, you know, like I said, I only watched Beverly's for a very brief amount of time, and I love Marge, but no, I couldn't put her on above any of the five people on this list. Maeve Kincaid's Vanessa, Matt, God, it's so many. Gosh, it's just, it's sad, you know? Television history is being made, and God, you would have wished it could go out on a good note. But anyway. Nadine Deeney!
Mel?
Oh, okay. I have Alexander Spaulding. I love Alex. Alan Michael. Who else did I not say? Oh, Lord, where's my list?
Vincent Irizarry's character.
Prince Richard! Jack. Nick!
Jack. Oh, my Edmund, all of them.
You did not just say that
You
thing.
Did not
you
say Edmund. Hold did on. You?
Who'd you just say? Who'd you just say?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I think everybody is allowed one mustache twirling villain in your soap lifetime, and that is mine. Oh, that is mine. I love him.
Mel is going to be hyping.
Right, Valentini, if you hired David Andrew McDonald, I would never watch One Life to Live again. He'll kill your show.
He does. He did it to Another World, and he did it to Guiding Light.
No, he didn't.
He's a good actor. He has a curse on him.
He goes to a show and it's dead.
You know what? He don't have no curse on no show. He was on Law and Order SVU for like a hot second. Let me just press.
And the ratings went down.
I tried, man. You got my back, Jillian.
I tried. It goes to Wyatt Earp. I'm dead with me.
You know where he's going next. He's going to As the World Turns. He went.
Oh, good. I don't care about that show.
Hey,
don't go to Another World. Whatever you do, if anything, go to All My Children.
I don't care about that show either.
Exactly. Go to All My Children. David Canary may not be on the show much longer. Who knows? But if he's gone, then all bets are off.
Okay, good.
Okay. Alex, Alan Michael, Holly, of course, Vanessa, Fletcher. Oh, I miss
Fletcher.
Oh. I hate Fletcher. He took poor Holly's bank.
Oh, shit. I
love Fletcher. Oh, I love that man. And Henry Chamberlain.
Oh, Pop yeah. Popper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
done.
Henry and HB.
And HB too.
No one's mentioned that other wife of Alan's.
India Von Helms.
Oh, India. How could I forget?
Nola Quint.
Mike.
Okay. Michelle Bauer.
Honorable mentions, Mike.
Wow. Okay, where do you start? Holly, Vanessa, Billy and Josh. In 1980, Douglas Marlin created NOLA and kind of put a little energy into the youth crowd. Her NOLA, Morgan, and Kelly was good stuff for a long time. The Spaldings, when they came to town, Alan left his mark, Alexandra. Just, it's hard to just draw a line somewhere and not, you know, drop people off the list, but
these are
the ones that had the impact.
David,
Billy.
Oh, David and Kat. Oh,
do you have Tourette's? You just yelling that shit out. Oh, I like that.
The one with
Jillian,
with the lighthouse. Shut
yes, and Beth Ellis dances across the screen. Oh, shit.
Jillian.
Okay. Okay, Jamie, you good? Okay.
I baptized myself the slut of the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, so, I'll fight you over that. Holly, Maureen, Mindy. Oh, God. Blake, Sherry Stringfield, Blake, Alan Michael, man, Roth. I liked Fletcher, Hamp, Jilly. And what was Hamp's little girl's name? Oh, Lord.
Cat!
There you go. And who played her?
Mia Long, who Eva Marcel had talked shit about, and she can't even back her way out of a paper bag.
Oh, and Nick McHenry. Loved the character. And that is pretty much it. Yeah, that's it.
Well, in honor of your guys,
Abigail.
It's many.
Who the hell is Abigail?
Abigail, who was deaf. She had cochlear implants.
Well, in honor of your guys' memory, I won't do any honorable mentions to detract from it because I'm sure that you guys would turn it into...
No, don't make yourself...
No, because the thing is I don't have the memories that you...
Look, Luke, if Mel could put Showkiller on hers...
That's the thing about Guiding Light for me. I love certain characters, but this has never been my show like it is for you guys. If there was any two people that left off my list that I would probably mention, it would be Bill Lewis and his son Bill. Both of those actors are great. Daniel Cosgrove is great. I do not remember the name of the actor who plays Bill at the moment.
Jordan Clark.
The scenes with Bill and Joshua were great as brothers. I would have
Billy. It's Billy. The daddy is Billy. Yeah.
Jeff Branson in the recast role has been good, but I've never, like, for me, Guiding Light has been that soap that I've never had that attachment to that you guys obviously have, so.
I understand. I mean, if you started watching that show any time in the last decade, I don't know how you kept it on.
Oh, we forgot
I can tell you how I kept it on this podcast. Other than that, it wouldn't be on.
Well, I readily admit I would have cut it off too if it wasn't for the podcast and our readers and our listeners who I knew still wanted to be there to the end. I would have cut this mess off the moment I saw that new production model. That Beth putting that man in that woodshed almost made me do it. But well, that production model would have done it for me.
Before we wrap things up, I just want to ask go around the circle real quick. Worst characters, Guiding Light. Mine, Cassie and Ava. Mel?
Avatar, Grady Foley, and Ava Peralta.
Oh, I forgot about Grady. Yeah, he's bad too. Jamie?
Ellen Wheeler. ever associated with Guiding Light.
Mike?
And now fictional Brent, Marion, and Grady.
Mike?
Wow, that's a tough one. I wish I'd had some time to ponder this one. But Grady, yeah. I would say Grady, Ashley, Daisy. I'll just think about who's on right now. And you can think about all the worst characters.
EJ Bonilla's character.
Today, but yeah, like within the last couple years. And for Maureen Garrett, we'll throw in Sebastian into those bad characters.
Jillian, worst characters?
Edmund.
Both. Yeah. Make you take Spanish class, Luke. Edmund. Two L's is Ia.
Edmund. Marina.
No. No.
Ashley. He said Jillian, not Mal. Marina, Ashley, Bonnie Denison, Daisy. Let me see. Shit, I'm all verklempt. That's it. I'm gonna go way back. Chelsea, that chick, Chelsea. What's her name? Chelsea.
Cassie DePava's character.
Cassie DePava. No, you did not.
Lord have mercy. I ain't gonna be able to interview Cassie DePava. Yes.
I didn't like. I said I didn't like the character. She's gangbusters as Christ. Oh, Blair, Cassie.
Blair.
No, that was back when they were trying to make her hide her accent.
Yes. And she was still singing it. And when she used to sing on that show, you could still hear that thick old accent. But did not like her at all. Chelsea needed to get got. And that is all.
Well, as we wrap, I have a message for you, Jamie, from my English teacher. They told me to tell you that Luke has enough problems speaking English to try and to worry about pronouncing Spanish.
Bonilla, two L's is Y sound.
We would encourage you to comment on this episode at podcast.
You want him calling you Luke Keir? Although didn't even know he was nominated for an award. I don't think
according to some people, he was joking.
I don't care.
Okay. You can email your comments to podcast@daytimeconfidential.com. Comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. We thank you for listening. Until next time. So long.
I'm coming on!
Bye, y'all.